Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. We're experts in ecologically friendly lab-grown diamonds. Mention code RADIO10 for 10% off. That's cleanorigin.com, online or one of our retail stores.
On February 18, 2021, the world watched in amazement as the next generation of Mars rovers set foot on the red planet. Mars Perseverance is the vehicle that will venture out into the Martian desert to help create the first weather network on another planet. To explore the mission details of NASA's latest rover, we're sitting down with one of the experts, Dr. Manuel De La Torre of NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. We'll break down the suite of instruments on board that will help determine the day-to-day weather conditions and how those conditions may affect the future of human exploration. Get ready for an out-of-this-world geek out. Manuel, thank you for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, we always ask our guests a question, and it's usually a question about how did you become a weather geek? I'm going to ask you a slightly different question. How did you become a physics and astronomy geek?
It started as a child. I don't know, partly because growing up as a Boy Scout, I loved going out into the mountains and watching the stars at night and wonder how big is this universe, and in an amazement and see how little we are compared to the rest of the night sky. And I don't know, that raised my interest in I'm trying to understand what is out there. And that attracted me to astronomy and especially physics. Physics is also about what is the universe made of? What are we, everything that surrounds us made of? That's it.
Yeah. No, so you have a story that's very similar to those of us in the weather world. Usually it's some storm or some event that happened when we were younger that sort of spearheaded our interest. And it sounds very similar. Let me give you, the listeners, some background on Dr. De La Torre. He's the deputy principal investigator of MEDA, M-E-D-A. And I'm pretty sure we're going to learn what that is. It's the Mars Environmental Dynamics Analyzer. He has been at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory since 1997. He has a master's degree in fundamental physics from Universidad Complutense of Madrid and a PhD in nonlinear phenomena and physics from UNED. He has also served as a professor at various universities in physics, and he's won several NASA Group Achievement Awards. So we're clearly talking to someone that knows his stuff, and so that's why we always have the best and brightest on Weather Geeks. Tell us a little bit about your career. Before we really dive into Mars rovers and Mars Perseverance and META, tell us a little bit about your career at JPL. What have you done at JPL? And by the way, JPL, the Jet Propulsion Lab, is a part of the NASA world, but it's also a part of the academic world too. I believe at Caltech. It's a very interesting, I spent 12 years of my career at NASA Goddard, and many people don't realize that there are several NASA centers around the nation and they all have various expertise. So tell us a little bit about your time at JPL.
So I did land at JPL a little bit by accident. I was at the time working at the university and doing geophysical fluid dynamics, which means essentially how the atmospheres flow. And this was very fundamental research. And I thought I would try to get an experience in looking at the real world data and connect that with these very abstract concepts that are almost more related to mathematics than to the real world. And the accident was in that I just thought I was coming for 1 year, but after 1 year of experience, I saw the wide range of possibilities that you encounter at JPL in terms of understanding and studying many different planets. And so I stayed, and when I arrived here, I was initially looking at the dynamics of the Jovian red spot, essentially. the question about how deep it is. And from there, it evolved into looking also at terrestrial phenomena, like processes that do affect our climate. And then continuing studying the Earth's atmosphere and all these climate processes, I heard of the opportunity to join the Mars Science Laboratory. There was a contribution of an environmental station to Curiosity that was coming from Spain. And because I myself came from Spain, it seemed like a nice fit where I could help both. So I joined. The Rover Environmental Monitoring Station. And when after a few years, when there was a call for proposals for another instrument suite on Mars 2020, we proposed together, the same team that worked for REMS. We were lucky, we won that proposal, and we're now measuring the weather on the surface of Mars. We proposed the Mars Environmental Dynamics Analyzer, META.
Yeah, and that's so, and we're talking with Dr. Manuel De La Torre of NASA's Jet Propulsion Lab, and we are about to have the ultimate weather geek out, but another worldly weather geek out, because indeed, the Mars Environmental Dynamics Analyzer, which is aboard the rover Perseverance, is indeed measuring the weather on Mars. And I think it's working in tandem with Mars Curiosity and the InSight lander, which also has some weather measuring capabilities as well. So tell us about weather monitoring on Mars. Why are we doing it?
To the question of why are we doing it, there are two answers to that, at least. The first one is pragmatic, practical. If we want to go there on Mars, we do have an atmosphere that we need to contend with. So we need to design the engineering of all the systems, devices that you take there to survive and work at the conditions that you are going to encounter there. So from a pragmatic point of view, it is preparation for future exploration of Mars, either robotic or human. The second answer, which I think is equally important, is precisely what to answer the question that I was asking myself as a kid. What is out there in the universe? How different or how similar it is to our very own world? So I do think that it goes after the questions of a deeper understanding of ourselves, our environment, how unique is our own Earth, or how different.
Yeah, I think that's right. As someone I mentioned that worked at NASA many years myself, you know, people don't understand the sort of big picture of why what NASA is doing is so important on so many fronts. I think people get caught up in their day-to-day lives and paying their bills and say, well, why are we spending all of this money on satellites to measure precipitation from space or going to Mars with rovers? It's a part of a bigger picture understanding that I think you articulated very well, in addition to just scientific and technological and engineering advancement that also benefit us here on our planet. I want to can you give the listeners, because again, many of the listeners of Weather Geeks probably know a lot about the weather and climate, but maybe don't know as much about Mars rovers. So put the Mars Perseverance in perspective as it relates to the sort of evolving sort of generation of Mars rovers. Why is this one different? What is it bringing to the table that previous ones didn't?
Yeah. So, the Mars weather studies started early on. In the first landed station was the Vikings. There were two platforms that landed in the 1970s, Viking Lander 1 and Viking Lander 2. They already carried temperature sensors, wind sensors, and they gave us the first look into what is it like on the surface of Mars. And in fact, one of them provided a barometer that survived for several years. So we were able to accumulate a record of 3 Martian years. Remember that, because Mars is further from the sun. A Martian year is 2 Earth years. So it takes longer to do the full cycle, seasonal cycle.
Is that called, do we call a Martian year a sol, or is that something else?
No, a sol is a day, a Martian day.
I see.
Which is about 39 minutes longer than a day on Earth.
So we have a Martian sol, but then the year is twice as long as the Earth year.
Yeah, we still call it a Martian year, and but we have not invented. Well, we do use the concepts of northern or southern spring, northern or southern winter, but we also measure them in what they call areocentric longitude, which measures how far we are in our travel around the sun. So that's what they call, as I said, solar longitude or areocentric longitude, LSOS. So Viking, when I say that I collected, I think it was 2 years and a half, of pressure data. That means 5 years, 5 Earth years of data. The other meteorological stations that came later with Mars Pathfinder, they were not designed to survive that long. So Mars Pathfinder, I heard that it was initially designed for a few weeks, and it lasted three times as long as it was designed for. So we did collect more additional data. Mars Pathfinder had one novelty in that it carried temperature sensors at different heights, so that we would get a vertical profile of temperature near the surface of Mars for, I think it was about 3 months. Then we had Phoenix, which landed on at a high latitude on the near the edge of the polar caps. So it measured the weather, the environment near the poles. Then we did get the Rover Environmental Monitoring Station on Curiosity, REMS, which is the one that brought me onto studying the surface of Mars. And with some of the spares of REMS, they were able to nearly improvise another meteorological station on InSight. And now META is an evolution of all the meteorological stations, taking everything we've learned from the previous meteorological stations. It has been refined and made more robust than the previous ones, so that we can measure, when we're measuring the same magnitudes like pressure, we have a higher resolution. When we're measuring temperatures, we're measuring it at different heights, as I mentioned that Mars Pathfinder did. When we are measuring radiation, now we are measuring different colors, which allows us to provide more information about atmospheric aerosols. Aerosols, when they interfere with the solar light, they do through scattering and as well as through absorption, they give us an information of how many aerosols do we have in the atmosphere. They provide us information about the particle size. Their color tells us if these aerosols are dominated by either ice or dust. We have relative humidity sensors, which still are challenged by the low atmospheric moisture of Mars. The relative humidity on Mars, even though there is water vapor in the air, remember that it is a very thin atmosphere. It is 100th from the surface. Its density is about 100th that of the Earth. So it's the kind of densities we would find, say, at 30 kilometers above the Earth's surface. So the clouds, even when they exist, and they do exist both on Mars and on Earth, at 30 kilometers, because the atmosphere is so thin, those clouds contain very little water. So any sensors that you send there, they are really, they're up to a really tough task. And what happens on Mars is as soon as the sun goes up, we do have the water vapor, the temperatures increase so much that the relative humidity goes close to 1%, which is the limit of our sensors. But at night, when the relative humidity increases to 20-80%, depending on the season, we are able to measure the hydrological cycle. What else do we have? Wind sensors, that is really a challenge on Mars as it is on Earth. I'm going in my mind through all the sensors, and the thermal infrared sensor. I think that thermal infrared sensor is actually a series of sensors that are looking the, as I said, in thermal infrared, and allow us to measure pretty much like when we measure your temperature, if you feel fever, with a thermal infrared sensor on occasion. So you will have those typically at the doctor. We use the same thing to measure the surface temperature, and at the same time, the temperature, I think, is at about some 30 meters above the surface, roughly. That way, we are able to get our vertical temperature profile, the one I mentioned, by measuring the temperature at the surface, the temperature at 0.85 centimeters, that's about 2.5, 3 feet, a little bit less than 3 feet, then 1.45, which is more like 5 feet, I believe, and then 40 meters. So we have four altitudes. And how that temperature changes with time is interesting because it tells us when do we have convective turbulence. I'm talking a lot, but...
This is beautiful. You're geeking out, as we say on this show, and we love it. This is one of the things we love about this podcast. But let me take a quick break, and then we will continue the conversation.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for an additional 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Dr. Manuel De La Torre. And you just heard what we do. This is what we do on Weather Geeks, and I love it. He was geeking out on weather Martian style. And one of the things that he talked about is how the evolution of these programs on Mars have brought us to the point where the MEDA instrument carried to Mars on Perseverance has provided us perhaps with the most advanced suite of weather instruments on the planet to date. And that builds on those previous missions. I want to talk a little bit about where these rovers are located taking these measures. But you mentioned earlier that there was one that went up to the polar regions. I believe InSight and Curiosity are located near the equator, as I recall. Where's Perseverance and MEDA?
Perseverance and MEDA are on Jezero Crater. I forget the exact longitude. It's still relatively close to the equator, but it's further than InSight and MSL. So we are in the northern hemisphere, which exposes us to a few more behaviors. I think I looked at once, where would we be if we were on Earth? We would be more or less in the north of the Indian subcontinent, while Perseverance is more in Indonesia. I forget the island. It's precisely... in the middle of the oceanic ocean.
Pretty good reference point for where it is relative to
Earth. And it is in the southern hemisphere, about 3 degrees south. Curiosity, Perseverance is, I think, it's about closer to 15 degrees. And it is on Jezero Crater. So Jezero Crater is another basin. I think it's about 2,000 meters below the average Mars surface. And it is a crater that shows from orbit, it shows a delta. And the reason why we landed there is because the main interest of perseverance is to look at astrobiology and potential biosignatures of life that as it might have existed billions of years ago. And one thing I like to point out is that for the weather geeks, we can call it that way. We can call perseverance objective that way. It is also a climate instrument because what we're after is we're looking at what the weather and environment were like billions of years ago. Remember that at the time, or well, not everyone knows, I myself discovered relatively recently, the Earth itself about 3 billion of years ago was not, the Earth's atmosphere did not have oxygen. So there are all these hypothesis theories that suggest that our own Earth probably was more of an orange sky, possibly because of the composition it had at the time. So at that time, the time we're looking after, Mars, the geology of Mars tells us that it was covered with water, or it had lots of water bodies, hence the delta where we landed at. We do see from orbit all this imagery that suggests that there were fluvial activities, so there were rivers that actually brought all these materials into that delta. And that delta is a great structure that collects materials from everywhere else that those rivers might have brought back or brought down to Jezero, as I said, a couple billion, 3 billion of years ago.
And so I know that you have something called MOXIE, oxygen-making system, because you just mentioned oxygen. And yeah. So Meta has all of these things that it's going to do in addition to measuring the weather. It's showing weather impacts on dust, measuring water vapor, and so forth. And so, again, all of the capabilities. Talk a little bit about both the oxygen making capabilities of, I guess, the MOXIE, and also the sort of importance of dust measurement on Mars.
Yes. Perseverance carries several instruments. I think it's about seven, MOXIE being one of them. So MOXIE is actually going to take the Martian atmosphere, which is mostly CO2 in composition, and try to extract oxygen by converting the CO2 from the atmosphere in carbon monoxide and oxygen. So it's essentially, it is some catalytic chemistry that it is used on Earth. The challenge that MOXIE has encountered is that this kind of instrumentation that is used on Earth occasionally, those are huge machines and that do work on our environment. So MOXIE's challenge is to work with, as I said, with a very thin atmosphere. So the amount of CO2 that they can capture or oxygen that they can produce after that is very small. And at the same time, they have to be small and consuming relatively little energy. They still are hungry because all this catalytic chemistry that they're using, that they're applying, requires a lot of heat. But anyway, it's one step towards producing instruments or tools that future missions could carry that have a weight that one can take to Mars.
Very interesting. We're talking with Dr. Manuel De La Torre about everything weather and Mars. And yes, other planets have Mars. I'm going to give you a little clue in case you didn't know this. The other planets have a polar vortex. You often hear about polar vortex here on Earth and the cold outbreaks, but there are other planetary systems in our solar system that actually have a polar vortex too. Mars even has dust storms or dust devils, these little tornado looking things. I have seen those in previous sort of images that have come from the planet. One of the really important things about Meta, and you mentioned this earlier, is its ability to measure particulates or aerosols, because dust is a a critical sort of, I guess, geological or geochemical process on the planet. So talk about Meta and the Perseverance and the role of dust on Mars.
Yes, the on Mars, there is very little water, as I said earlier, and the main contributor to the heating of the atmosphere is actually dust. Mars is a dusty planet. It has a couple of interesting differences with our own Earth. The first one being that when we do look at the planet, even before, I think it was the first probe that was sent to Mars, all of a sudden encountered itself nearly engulfed in a Martian storm. Well, it was high enough that it was not engulfed, but it did measure, it did see darkening of the Martian skies. Because on Mars, there are dust storms all the time, but some of them do get to engulf the whole planet. We know by now that it is a very repetitive process. So every single year we do have what we call the dust storm season that spans for several months, which has been even subdivided into several stages or phases where you do have these dust storms that will engulf a large proportion of the planet. And about every second year, roughly, we get a big dust storm that covers the whole planet. When dust is lifted and covers the whole planet, what happens is it darkens the sky, so the sunlight does not penetrate that deep. But at the same time, the sunlight does not escape. So the in the daytime, the temperatures at noon will get colder. But at the same time, at night, it will not cool down that much. So the temperature range on Mars that right now we're measuring between 9 Fahrenheit and minus 117 on a typical sol, that temperature range will decrease, will become less of a difference. At the same time, that homogenizes the planet, and weather becomes calmer during the dust storms. It's interesting. We've measured different missions in the past have measured an increasing winds, but at the same time that we see an increasing winds, we seem to find less baroclinic activity for the extreme geeks, so less planetary waves.
That's a nice weather term there, baroclinicity there, these gradients in temperature that we see as along cold fronts here in the U.S. and so forth, or on the planet in G. So I love it. And I Manuel, you told me earlier that you study Earth as well. So I love any guest that can throw out baroclinicity in a Weather Geeks podcast. That just warms my heart. So, you know, there's one thing I want to ask you, because I think it confuses people about the Martian atmosphere versus the Earth's atmosphere. And you alluded to radiation at measuring instruments on Meta earlier. You mentioned that the majority of the Martian atmosphere is carbon dioxide. Here on Earth, we're worried about excessive carbon dioxide and warming of the climate, which we are experiencing and will continue to do so. Yet you just mentioned temperatures of minus 100 degrees and 9 degrees. So, and I explain to the listeners how this carbon dioxide rich atmosphere doesn't have a global warming problem, if you will. I think it's counterintuitive to people, but it's related to the physics and density and thinness of the atmosphere and all kinds of interesting things. So explain that to the listeners, because I know it can be confusing.
Yes. So first of all, Mars does have its own greenhouse activity because of carbon dioxide. Remember that, as I mentioned earlier, Mars is about twice the distance from the sun that the Earth is. So without that carbon dioxide, Mars would be way colder than it is. So that in the first place. Second, you also mentioned that when you were asking, the Martian atmosphere is very thin. So even though it does have a greenhouse effect, by being so thin, that means that the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere is much smaller than on Earth, or much less.
And it's pretty low even on Earth, relatively speaking.
Yes, but it is relatively low, but it does have a powerful greenhouse effect. water vapor does too. But remember that our Earth has evolved over the billions, or life on our own Earth has evolved over the billions of years, adapted to the levels of water vapor and carbon dioxide that we were having. So this increase in carbon dioxide per se might not be endangering different types of life, but the fact that it is shifting the location of ecosystems on Earth, that is already in the first place having lots of impacts in terms of economic impacts. Now we cannot grow the plants where we used to be able to grow them, or we have pests and insects that attack the trees. I think, where did I read? Reading the Rockies, there is right now this infection that is killing most of the trees by some insect that could not survive earlier in this, in those environments. It is altering our ecosystems in ways that we are not used to or prepared for. So that's it's not that it's going to become totally unlivable. It's going to get much hotter. Here where I live, I remember coming to this country about 20 years ago and having to suffer through probably one heat wave every year. Now these heat waves that would last 1 week, maybe 10 days. Now we are getting 3 or 4. Do we survive? Yes. It is a pain though.
Yeah, and it certainly would impact some vulnerable populations less adapted or more at risk from heat and wildfires and so forth. Let's take one more break.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we are back on the Weather Geeks podcast. I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and I'm speaking with Dr. Manuel De La Torre, who has really enlightened us on mission control to Mars Perseverance. What's the forecast? You know, one of the really fascinating aspects of the Perseverance mission, and I was just reading about it this morning, is the, I guess, what has been called the Mars copter, but I guess it's technically called Ingenuity. First time we've sent a flying vehicle to the red planet. And I believe that I saw some images on social media that it actually is now being lowered down to the surface in early April. It will actually, sometime in early April, it will take its maiden flight. Clearly there are atmospheric implications. We're going to be flying a little helicopter drone around in the atmosphere of Mars. Talk a little bit about just how neat and fascinating that is.
Yeah, it is a great experiment. So it is a drone, basically. You can think of it as a drone that has the challenge of having to fly on a very thin atmosphere. And we are all terribly anxious, wanting to see what is going to happen, but also incredibly nervous. Remember that because we have to do all of these remotely, we do need to send the commands one day before the flight, guess what is the best time for it to fly, and cross our fingers hoping that the weather that we predicted we're going to have is not going to play against the helicopter. And the main challenges we're fighting with, or the helicopter team is fighting with, is understanding better the atmosphere and what are the times where we do expect a turbulence or not, pretty much like when we do fly. Nobody likes to sit on an airplane where the airplane gets into turbulence. Now, on Earth, where we've been developing airplanes and helicopters for longer than a century. We've learned to design those systems. Now, this is the first flight of a helicopter on the Martian environment. So as excited as we are, we're also terribly nervous about how that's going to go. Here, when we fly a drone, typically those of you who might fly a drone, I've only seen other people do it. You decide if this is a good day, you go out, you start flying your drone, and then you see in real time how is it behaving, and you can make decisions about, okay, let's land the drone or let's keep flying. We cannot do that.
You're right. Yeah, it's a little bit of a different problem. And you mentioned something else that I wanted to kind of ask you about. You mentioned the forecast that you make. Are you using numerical weather prediction in the same way that we forecast weather on the planet Earth? I mean, we're solving these complex Navier-Stokes equations, thermodynamic equations on a rotating body by giving it data and then running solving those equations forward in time on very large supercomputers and so forth. Are you doing that to make forecasts on Mars?
Yes, we've been doing that for a good long time. In fact, it's part of our entry, descent, and landing preparation, because once you enter the Martian atmosphere, at the speeds that the spacecraft is entering, the atmosphere is still going to affect you. It's still going to produce drag. We use the drag to our benefit, or the entry, descent, and landing engineers use drag to actually help navigate and control a little bit the destination of the spacecraft as it lands. Then when the parachute is deployed, the parachute is exposed suddenly to the Martian winds. The parachute has to provide enough resistance to the atmosphere that it produces some lift or some slowdown. And when it does so, it is also at the same time exposed to the strength and direction of the Martian winds. So it could deviate the spacecraft from where it is going to. And in order to do those simulations, we do use the complex global circulation models. For the helicopter, it is a different problem. Pretty much like on Earth, we have what the geeks call microclimate or micrometeorology, which is the meteorology at a local place. For instance, where I am at right now, next to the San Gabriel Mountains, the mountain weather is pretty different from 1 mile downhill where it's on the plain, it's on the basin. So even though on the large scale you are within the same weather system, you still experience differences where the topography is affecting the type of winds you're exposed to, the hours at which you get winds, especially near the mountains where we have this downslope jets in the evening or upslope at noon. The helicopter is going to be subject to the same kind of dynamics and phenomena.
Yeah, that's going to be really challenging. But as I say, from my days at NASA, we got paid to do really hard things, and usually NASA does a good job at pulling them off. Even just going to Mars so frequently and landing as if it's routine now—that's a really hard thing still to do. And NASA's doing it with regularity now. So kudos to you and all of my former colleagues and the NASA engineers and scientists and all the contractors and support staff. Kudos to you all. We really have to end it there, but before we do, it's time for our Geek of the Week. We like to highlight a scientist superstar, a great geologist, or a weather weenie at the end of every podcast. This episode's Geek of the Week is Howard Gebhardt. Howard is an air quality meteorologist at Air Resources Specialists Incorporated. He first decided to become a meteorologist when he was in seventh grade, and he uses his weather expertise in his day-to-day job and has even appeared as an expert witness for air pollution exposure. Wow, Howard, that's really cool. He's no stranger to crazy weather, as he witnessed the devastating Colorado flooding in 2013, the 1997 floods in Fort Collins, and more recently, the terrible air quality from October 2020 Colorado wildfires. Thank you for all of your hard work, Howard, and congratulations. And don't forget to follow Howard on Twitter at Gebhardt Howard. Now, if you think you know someone that is deserving of being our Geek of the Week, be sure to follow us on our social media handles. Is there anywhere, before we let you go, Manuel, that people can follow you or the mission on Twitter or on the web?
Yes, we do have a website. Marston D20 has a website that even shares all the pictures that we are taking from the surface. I forget it, but you can do a quick search look for Mars rovers or Perseverance, JPL NASA, and it will take you quickly to the website where we are collecting and publishing near real time every picture that we're taking.
Yeah, and I would actually follow up on that and say, in addition to Perseverance, I mean, I've been able to find weather information from Curiosity and Insight and so forth on the web as well. Manuel, thank you for joining us on the Weather Geeks podcast.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
I'm Dr. Marshall Shepard from the University of Georgia, and we will see you next time on Weather Geeks.